I will not repeat the mistakes of past administrations that got us into this very dangerous position.
President Trump fires at North Korea in State of the Union speech. It's Thursday, February 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, eradicating polio remains elusive in three countries. An artist uses light to remember Hiroshima. A Picasso painting on display in Asia ahead of auction. Analyzing snake bites, new cars in Washington. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In his first State of the Union address, U.S. President Donald Trump referred to China as a rival and declared an end to what he called an era of economic surrender. The Trump administration has repeatedly accused China of trade abuses, and more trade actions against Beijing are expected soon. But the president did not mention the world's second largest economy directly when he pledged to protect intellectual property and fight for fair and reciprocal trade. President Trump was more direct in comments about North Korea, calling its government depraved and a cruel dictatorship. Trump again promised to exert maximum pressure to prevent Pyongyang from developing nuclear missiles that could threaten the U.S. mainland.
Past experience has taught us that complacency and concessions only invite aggression and provocation. I will not repeat the mistakes of past administrations that got us into this very dangerous position.
However, he was more restrained than at times in the past when he called North Korean leader Kim Jong-un Little Rocket Man. He also did not mention the possible use of force, despite recent reports that the Trump administration is considering launching a limited military strike in response to a future provocation. Bong Yong-shik is a political analyst at Yonsei University's Institute for North Korean Studies in Seoul.
I don't know whether it's a good news in terms of, Trump administration opting for more diplomatic engagement toward Pyongyang, or Trump administration getting more serious about taking different measures, including some kinds of military options.
In the last year, tensions between North Korea and the United States have escalated over Pyongyang's efforts to develop a nuclear-tipped missile capable of hitting the United States. The Trump administration has led international efforts to impose harsh economic sanctions on North Korea, but has also emphasized that military force remains a viable option to deal with the growing threat to the U.S. mainland. South Korea's leadership has been advocating increased engagement to reduce tensions and recently negotiated at least a temporary pause in North Korean missile and nuclear tests by persuading Pyongyang to participate in the upcoming Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. The United States also agreed to postpone joint military exercises with South Korea until after the Olympic Games to accommodate the North's peaceful participation. In his speech, President Trump seemed to argue that there can be no compromise with the brutal and repressive Kim government.
We need only look at the depraved character of the North Korean regime to understand the nature of the nuclear threat it could pose to America and to our allies.
The president recounted the tragic experience of Otto Warmbier, who died last year soon after being released from North Korea while in a comatose state. The American student was visiting North Korea in 2016 and was arrested for allegedly attempting to steal a propaganda poster. He was sentenced to 15 years hard labor, but soon fell into a coma from which he never awoke. Warmbier remained in prison for almost a year without adequate medical care as his condition continued to deteriorate. His parents, Fred and Cindy Warmbier, who were invited by the president to attend the State of the Union, broke into tears when Trump pointed them out in the gallery as powerful witnesses to a menace that threatens our world. Trump also singled out another invited guest, North Korean defector Ji Sung-ho, as one more witness to the ominous nature of this regime. In 1996, Ji lost a hand and a foot when he fell from a moving train while stealing coal to barter for food during a famine in which millions of North Koreans starved to death. He endured painful amputations and later torture before escaping North Korea on crutches. Ji is now a human rights activist with a group Now Action and Unity for Human Rights and is involved in radio broadcasts into North Korea, where the state tries to restrict access to the outside world.
Today, he lives in Seoul, where he rescues other defectors and broadcasts into North Korea what the regime fears most, the truth.
Also raising concerns that the United States may be preparing preventive military action to deal with the North Korean threat are reports that Victor Cha's name was withdrawn as nominee for U.S. ambassador to South Korea. Cha is a Georgetown University professor and former national security advisor on North Korean affairs during the administration of President George W. Bush and a sometimes guest on VOA Asia. Writing in the Washington Post Tuesday, Cha said he shared his opposition to the preventative use of force against North Korea with White House officials while he was under consideration for a position. Cha said he empathizes with the hope that a military strike would shock Pyongyang into appreciating U.S. strength, but that hope must give into logic. Given North Korea's missile and artillery capability, Cha argues President Trump would put at risk the lives of millions in South Korea and Japan on the assumption that a crazy and undeterrable dictator would rationally be cowed by a demonstration of U.S. kinetic power. Our thanks to VOA correspondent Brian Padden and Lee Yoon-ji in Seoul. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Trump condemns depraved North Korea in State of the Union address. Hong Kong citizens move to Taiwan in waves after political upsets. British Prime Minister arrives in China to forge post-Brexit trade ties. White House embarrassed by NBC's pre-Olympic coverage from North Korea. Colorful makeover puts Mumbai slum on tourist map. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are always found on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. After 3 decades and $15 billion, just 3 countries still harbor polio. Those 3 countries, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria, all suffer from violent insurgencies. 2 vaccinators were killed by insurgents in Pakistan earlier this month. VOA's Steve Barragona has more on a new study that is one of the first to document how a lack of security sets back efforts to eradicate the paralyzing disease.
Terrorist attacks, drone strikes, military battles. They're all taking place in Pakistan while health officials try to eradicate polio. It's not the first time the polio campaign has encountered conflict zones, says Amol Verma at the University of Toronto. So
the question is the effect big enough to really be a barrier to polio eradication? Our study suggests that yes, it is.
Verma and colleagues looked at data from nearly 700 district-wide vaccination campaigns and monthly figures on new polio cases. They compared them to casualty data on PakistanBodyCount.org and other sites that tally news reports of suicide bombings, drone strikes, and other violence. Verma says conflicts sometimes force campaigns to be canceled.
But what we found is even when vaccination campaigns were carried out in times of high insecurity, the vaccination coverage during those campaigns was about 5% lower than in times of low insecurity.
That meant more than 250,000 children did not get vaccinated, and 73% more children got polio.
Even though it's only a 5% reduction in vaccination rates, that is enough to allow the virus to continue to be circulated and transmitted.
As the campaign reels from the killing of 2 vaccinators in Quetta, the study is a reminder that the last few pockets of polio will be the hardest to eradicate. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, British Prime Minister Theresa May begins a 3-day visit to China aimed at boosting economic ties with the Asian giant ahead of her country's exit from the European Union next year. Already, a large agriculture deal between Britain and China has been announced as May stops in the central city of Wuhan. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's Thursday. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. And if you follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia, you'll often see great interviews live by VOA Asia's Skylar Ogden. Earlier today, she met with artist Kei Ito, who walked VOA through his photography exhibit, After Image Requiem, which recalls his grandfather's experience during the bombing of Hiroshima. The exhibit is housed at the War Memorial in Baltimore, Maryland. The artist created a series of 108 prints using the sun and his naked body to paint images onto photographic paper. Kei Ito's partner, Andrew Kuiper, received a competitive grant award of up to $10,000 from the Baltimore Cultural Alliance to create the art piece. Here's an excerpt of our visit with him.
My grandfather was in Hiroshima when a bomb was dropped in 1945. He survived. He lost most of his family, and he fled to Tokyo, became the anti-nuclear activist. He fought against the use of nuclear bomb throughout his life, but he passed away when I was 9 years old.
So sunlight is, you're basically painting with sunlight or creating exactly. The images with sunlight.
These prints are made with the sunlight in my body. And the interesting thing is, I believe when a bomb was dropped in Hiroshima, the radiation, or I like to call it invisible light, was piercing through my grandfather's body and inscript itself to my grandfather's genes. And to some extent, my grandfather's genes became a film that capturing these light. And that passed on to me as a legacy of, you know, his spirit of anti-nuclear activist. And now I'm using my body and also using the sun, exposing it to this light-sensitive paper, try to portray what was captured on my grandfather's genes that day.
And what are you? What image that do you are you hoping that this, you know, this exhibit will communicate to the audience? What message, rather, you know?
So, I think I mentioned that there's 108 prints inside of the space, and 108 has a lot to do with the Japanese Buddhism belief that everyone contains 108 evil desire that causes war and murder or all of the negative thing. And there's an event called Joya no Kane in Japan. It basically, you strike every single Japanese temple, which is a lot in Japan, strikes bell 108 times throughout New Year's Eve to New Year. And every single strike, you can hear it anywhere in Japan, like, because it's so many of temple in there. And as you hear the bell ringing, each time you get rid of this evil desire one by one, and as you go on, and by 108th time, which is a new year, you face the new year with new self, a cleansed self.
Interesting.
And I incorporate a lot of lots of that aspect into my work, because I think it's a ritualistic image making. That's what I'm doing, and one by one, you know, like, I'm exposing what was captured inside of my body, passed on to my body, and by exposing it, like, you can see a lot of struggling body gesture in the prints. Some calm, some really aggressive, some you can't even resemble the body anymore.
Thank you so much for being with us on VOA Asia and taking our viewers through this really interesting experience, really interesting exhibit. And, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So good to meet you.
See Skylar Ogden's Facebook Live interview with artist Kei Ito at VOA Asia Facebook. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
The This news alert from VOA Asia. Vietnam marks 50 years since the Tet Offensive, with patriotic dance performances recalling the attacks that changed the course of the Vietnam War. In 1968, the Viet Cong launched an unprecedented offensive in coordination with the North Vietnamese Army to attack all of South Vietnam's largest towns and cities. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. See and share our stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a rare Picasso painting will be auctioned off in London next month. The 1937 work titled Woman in Beret and Check Dress, inspired by the painter's French lover Marie-Therese Walter, is being shown in Hong Kong, Taipei, Los Angeles, and New York before being sold. VOA's Latika Hoke reports the painting's Hong Kong debut is a clear indication of the growing importance of the Asian art market.
The woman who inspired the painting began a relationship with Picasso when she was 17, and they had a daughter before he moved to another lover, Dora Maar.
It's not only a portrait of Marie-Therese Walter, but it's also a portrait of Dora Maar, who Picasso was also very much involved with from 1936. And it also is heavy with references to Guernica, which is, of course, his greatest masterpiece, also painted in 1937. And now in the Reina Sofia in Madrid.
Picasso is famous for his portrayal of women, many of them in vivid colors and angular shapes during his Cubist phase. The Sotheby's auction house has valued this one at $50 million.
I think a painting of this importance and quality is exceptionally rare. And there have been very, very few paintings that you could compare to the quality and importance of this picture that have appeared at public auction over the last few years.
The painting started its pre-auction tour in Hong Kong Tuesday. It will also be shown in Taiwan before heading for the United States.
Sotheby's has been bringing highlights from our New York and London Impressionist and Modern sales to Hong Kong for preview in the last 20 years. We've seen a steady growth in terms of buyers and the interest, culminating in last year in the November New York sale. Of the top 10 highest lots, five were actually purchased by Asian clients.
Last November, Leonardo da Vinci's painting Salvator Mundi was sold for a record price of more than $450 million at an auction in New York. Before that, Picasso's work, The Women of Algiers, held the world record for the most expensive piece of art sold at an auction, after fetching more than $179 million. Zlatica Hope, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hong Kong lawmakers have followed mainland China in a vote to end the sale of ivory. China is the world's largest ivory retail market. Wildlife activists have hailed the move as vital towards halting the slaughter of elephants. This story and more are online at VOA 60 and visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an estimated 5 million people around the world are bitten by venomous snakes each year. More than 100,000 victims die. In many cases, the key to survival is anti-venom. But getting the right treatment can depend on knowing what kind of snake did the biting. VOA's Kevin Enix has some good news. New medical technology developed in Denmark is taking the guesswork out of the snake bite business.
This simple venom test kit is designed to work in the field. The only equipment is this centrifuge and a smartphone.
Idea is to separate the red blood cells with this, then take from the Eppendorf tubes, which are placed in here, take the serum or plasma out and incubate it for 30 minutes in this incubation chamber, after which they can be taken out, put into these regular cuvettes, which are then analyzed with this spectrophotometer that is, well, not just smartphone compatible, but utilizes the smartphone to get, and an app to get the results.
Every poisonous snake has unique venom made up of different protein patterns. Identify the pattern and you've identified the snake.
So the new thing is that we have tested a lot of small proteins with the snake venoms and found that there's a pattern in which proteins are cleaved by the different snake venoms, and we are able to utilize that pattern to detect the species that have envenomed a patient.
Then use your phone camera to take a close look at the venom. The app identifies the type of snake and helps doctors make quicker, potentially life-saving decisions.
Whether they should choose a new antivenom that is developed against specific snake species, or whether they should use one of the existing polyvalent alternatives that may not be optimal, but that do work broadly against a few different, many different species.
The team's work could help the estimated 5 million people who are bitten every year. Those bites kill at least 100,000 people and cause an estimated 400,000 venom-related amputations. The team is also working to reformulate antivenom to make it safer.
For the last 3 years, we've been focusing on substituting existing antisera with human antibodies that can neutralize different snake toxins. And the benefit of doing this is that you can avoid having the nasty adverse reactions that you get from sera.
The World Health Organization, the Red Cross, and Doctors Without Borders have all expressed interest in a field version of the snake bite kit and app. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
We have shared a lot of the big auto shows around the world and especially in Asia on this program. Our annual Washington show here is not the biggest or most important of the year, but it does attract a lot of attention from enthusiasts and potential customers to automotive industry professionals. And while self-driving cars are still some time off, VOA's George Pudich is steering us toward the focus this year, which continues to be fuel efficiency.
A big star of the show is Ford's 5-liter, 475-horsepower Mustang Bullitt, a car that commemorates the vehicle late Hollywood star Steve McQueen drove back in 1968 in a cult action movie of the same name. The Mustang Bullitt was unveiled at the much bigger North American International Auto Show held in Detroit earlier this month.
I'm Molly McQueen. And Steve McQueen was my grandfather.
We were so excited to unveil it with Molly McQueen, who is the granddaughter of Steve McQueen, for whom this vehicle was made back in 1968. So just a really cool moment for the company.
For those who like sports cars but value fuel efficiency, Ford offers a slightly less powerful, mere 325-horsepower Mustang with 2.7-liter EcoBoost engine. Like many other cars this year, its fuel efficiency comes from a turbocharger paired with 10-speed automatic transmission and 2 fuel injectors per cylinder. Playing on the power with fuel efficiency card, Toyota came with a completely redesigned 5th-generation Avalon.
It's also going to have brand new for 2019, the XSC, so it's this mix of luxury and sport. So if you want something luxurious, you want something sporty, the XSC is going to be a nice addition to our Avalon family.
For the first time, Toyota's Camry, the most popular family sedan in the United States, will be offered in a sporty version with a new 3.5-liter, 300-horsepower V6 engine. For those totally fixed on the future, the hydrogen-powered Toyota Mirai offers zero-emission propulsion with an estimated 500-kilometer range and only 5 minutes to refuel, when you can find a hydrogen fueling station. Many car makers came with a range of models for everybody's wallet. For instance, Kia offers gas, electric, and plug-in hybrid versions, ranging from $22,000 to $38,000, with a plug-in's consumption a mere 2 liters per 100 kilometers. This year, Mercedes is not present, so Hyundai's luxury line Genesis attracted a lot of attention.
Everything looks good, as usual. It's a great presentation, and we're looking at the Genesis cars. I like to look at the G70. That's what I have interest in.
Almost all new cars have a touch-sensitive screen and one of the popular voice recognition personal assistants. Some also have wireless charging for smartphones, turn-by-turn navigation, and Apple's autoplay with home-to-car and car-to-home commands. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can hear us daily as we stream on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. We're also on the radio. Many great radio stations across Asia, like Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Thanks to everyone there who was listening today. We always thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Keith Holmes, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead.